have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. Well, would you consider yourself a financially savvy individual? Are you one of those people with the so-called Midas touch? You know, in these days of tough financial choices, many of us look with admiration, if not a little envy, upon those who are able to prosper even during economic downturn. Well, today, Kenneth says that more important than maintaining a balance sheet is how we weigh on God's balance scale.
Hi there again, everyone. It's good to have you with us for another week of Times of Refreshing. I would like to talk to you about recession revelations, or what we can learn from times of economic recessions or hardships. When was the last major economic recession that we have experienced? It does seem at this point so far away and quite a long time ago. Our memories tend to be short. We quickly forget the hard times when the good times come rolling by again. Sometimes they are spoken of as being cyclical in nature, but it's something that can be just around the corner and can overtake us at any time. And we're not just talking about global, international, or national economic recessions. It can be local and it can be personal. It's just a financial fallout that puts you in dire straits. But it's important for us to come away from that experience, realizing and learning something far deeper and higher, so that we come away from it spiritually enriched. For this first part today, we are going to deal with covetousness, the negative aspect. And for the second part tomorrow, I shall deal with contentment, which is the positive aspect. Well, let's begin with a question that every financial investor would ask. What yields better returns? The financially savvy are always looking for better yields, better returns on their investments. So let's pose this question. What is more profitable than silver and yields better gains than gold? When the financial markets are in doldrums and are roiled, people begin to find that stocks and shares and even cash and any other kind of financial instruments are shaky and insecure and cannot be trusted. And people begin to revert to precious metals like silver and gold for value when the value of everything else seems to be crashing down. Now, I'm no economist or financial analyst, and I'm simply asking this question from a layman's point of view in order to prompt a search for an answer from the Bible. And you might be really surprised to find that the Bible has a specific answer to that specific question. You'll find some sound prudential advice from Proverbs chapter 3, verses 13 to 15, and this is what it says. Listen to this. Happy is the man who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding. For her proceeds are better than the proceeds of silver, and her gain than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things you may desire cannot compare with her. You may say that is metaphorical, or just a proverb, but it's the truth. What is more profitable than silver and yields better gains than gold? Well, according to Proverbs 3, it's wisdom and understanding. They bring better profits than silver and greater gain than fine gold. So that's the reason why we are doing this, to uncover recession revelations. The critical thing in going through a crisis is not so much coping, but changing. Crises serve to reveal the true state and condition of a situation and of ourselves. A crisis does not make or break a person. It just reveals the person. But it is how we respond to it that makes or mars us. Now, the word crisis is in fact a Bible word in the original Greek, which is exactly that same word, crisis. It's a Greek word, and it's often used to refer to an accusation or condemnation or judgment. And the idea behind crisis is judgment, which denotes two things. First, there is a discriminating between truth and myth. And then, as a result of that, there is a deciding based on that fact. So there's discriminating and there is a deciding. In the book of Ecclesiastes, after the book of Proverbs, chapter 7, verse 14, it says this, "In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him." And that's exactly what we are doing here. While we may rejoice in the day of prosperity, we also want to consider the days of adversity. Wisdom and understanding are the best things we can gain from any financial fallout through a recession or a crisis. And that enables us to have a paradigm shift in our monetary and material mindsets from that of the world to that of the Bible. What a recession can do is to bring revelation by shedding light on our true spiritual state and the state of things as they really are when they're exposed. This is more than a reflection in the sense of our own thoughts and take on a situation. Rather, it is a revelation in the sense of what God thinks and says about it. We have to be constantly reminded and taught by God how to discriminate and distinguish between our thoughts and His thoughts. As it says in Isaiah chapter 55, verses 8 and 9, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." So I have framed the first question in financial terms to provoke our thoughts on this subject. What yields better returns? Now here is a second question, which is again framed in financial terms. How's your balance sheet? Now again, I'm no financial expert. My father was an accountant, which probably explains the reason why I am not. I don't have any complicated investment portfolios or statements to read. In fact, the only statement I read is my bank statement every month. But I do know that a balance sheet shows you assets and liabilities. It shows credit and debit, any profit or loss. And when it is not balanced, this is the way some people describe it. What's on the left doesn't seem right, and what's on the right hasn't got anything left. But I think more important than trying to maintain a balance sheet is how we weigh on God's balance scale. This was the pronouncement of God on Belshazzar, the Babylonian king, in Daniel chapter 5, verse 27, where he said, "You have been weighed in the balances and found wanting." Far more important than just having a good balance sheet is the fact that when I'm weighed in God's balances, I should not be found wanting. In life, people may gain some or lose some, as they say. It's not that critical. It's not the be-all and end-all. In the end, they kind of balance out. But when you're dealing with things to do with eternity, you either gain all or you lose all. So it's critical for us to make that right choice and decision. A financial crisis becomes personal when individuals lose either one of two things, money or their job. If they lose money, there is a loss of prosperity and security. Or if they lose their job, there is a loss of provision and satisfaction, which the job provides. And of course, these may in turn lead to other forms of losses, such as health or family and friends. And when there is a loss of money or income or jobs, we realize anew that these are not ends in themselves, but are merely means. Our self-worth is not determined by our net worth. Our value takes after the things we truly value, whether or not they are temporal or eternal. With those two financially framed questions, I'm now going to move on to two biblical admonitions. And the first is, beware of covetousness. And we come across this in Luke's Gospel chapter 12, where we read about the parable of the rich fool, as it is commonly called, that Jesus taught. And in a sense, we are all rich fools until a crisis like a recession comes and wakes us up to the things that matter most or those that matter least in life. In the prologue to the parable, Jesus said in Luke's Gospel, chapter 12, verse 15, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, For one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. That's in the New King James Version that I'm reading from, or in the New International Version. It says, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. That's a common simple name for covetousness, the drive and the desire to always have more that cannot be satisfied. When we have little, we are usually driven more by need. But when we have more, it is then that we tend to be driven more by greed. You remember the great American billionaire that I've mentioned before, John D. Rockefeller? He famously answered when asked what it took to make him satisfied in life. And this was his classic answer, just one more dollar. It is a futile and elusive dream to be always chasing after something that can never truly satisfy. We become obsessed by what we try to possess. And this is the material law of life. Mark that well. We are obsessed by what we possess. We imagine we own those things, when in fact they own and control us. And hence, it is not what you own that matters, it is what owns you. That is why it often happens that the rich get richer in material possessions, but at the same time, their souls get leaner. Listen to what Ecclesiastes, another book of wise sayings in the Bible, has to say. In the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 5, verses 10 and 11, it says this, he who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. So what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? We find how true that is both in experience and in observation. The more people have, the greater the appetite that is generated. And so the voracious cycle continues. Now let's come back to Jesus' parable of the rich fool in Luke's Gospel chapter 12. Reading on from verse 16, then Jesus spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. An affluent society is always driven by an acquisitive attitude and a compulsive culture of consumption. And if you live in such a society, you find that this is what drives people most of the time. Everybody is busy trying to get all the time, with little or no thought spared for giving. Now just think of how futile this scramble for more really is. We perspire by working very hard to acquire what we aspire only to expire. Because no matter how far you have gone or how much you have gotten, we all arrive at the same narrow end of the funnel at the bottom in the end. What this rich farmer said he will do is what we all naturally tend to do. When we run out of space for our increasing accumulations, we will want to pull down and build greater, and store and hoard more. Acquiring and hoarding give a false sense of security and satisfaction. And that is where the danger lies. The enjoyment and indulgence is shallow and short-lived. Here is a good practical guide to buying things. Buy them out of need, not out of greed. And if you want chapter and verse for it, here is a good biblical guide to buying. It's from 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 30. Where Paul describes the disposition of those who know that the time is short. And this is one of those characteristics. Those who buy as though they did not possess. This is what I call the disposition of dispossession. It doesn't mean that you cannot buy things, but you buy as though you don't possess them. You have a detached, a functional, and a utilitarian view of buying things. They serve a function. They are not an acquisition for accumulation. Reading on in the parable of the rich fool from Luke's Gospel chapter 12, verse 19, the rich farmer continues to say, and I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. And just as he was settling down to enjoy his newfound comforts and acquisitions, there came a rude shock. In verse 20, "But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God.'" This is a wake-up call by God for that rich farmer. And it takes a crisis call sometimes to shatter our unfounded confidence and to realize that we have been fools all along. Do you know what the Bible's definition of a fool is? It's repeated twice in Psalm 14 and Psalm 53, in the very first verse of each of those two identical Psalms. And this is the biblical definition of a fool. It's somebody who says there is no God. So if God is not in your life and you take things into your own hands, when things begin to go helter-skelter and go out of control, you lose meaning and you lose hope. That's being a fool. But if you believe in God, you can say thank God even if you have lost money or a job, but have gained your soul in the process. And that's a really good deal. It's not a bad deal. In the same Gospel of Luke, chapter 9, verse 25, Jesus said, "For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and is himself destroyed or lost?" Or to put it in the unforgettable words of Jim Elliot, that young American missionary who was martyred together with four of his co-workers, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." And those words were immortalized because he gave his life for Christ and for those whom Christ died. Well, at least for us now, it's not too late, as for the farmer in the parable whose time had come this night. So it's your call now if it is not the end yet. When it comes to the most important things in life, we have sometimes to lose something in order to gain something. We can't hang on to the one and still have the other. This is not a both-and kind of proposition. Rather, it's an either-or proposition. We often tend to think we can have all the riches in the world and not be spoiled by it. It rarely happens that way. And God's parting question to that man was, "Then whose will those things be which you have provided?" This man had lived and worked all his life on the basis of his self-provision, rather than depending on God's provision. So beware of any subtle shift from being grateful for God's provision to becoming anxious over self-provision, or worse, to be envious of others' position. So that's the first admonition, beware of covetousness. The second admonition I would like to call beware of mammonism. And this is a term which comes from Luke's Gospel chapter 16, where Jesus had some stern words of warning about the danger of worshipping a money god, which is what mammon is. In Luke 16, verse 13, Jesus said, "No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other." And here is the punchline: you cannot serve God and mammon. Now, mammon is an Aramaic word. That's the language of common use in Jesus' days, very much like what English is today. And that's an Aramaic word for wealth or riches. And this is similar to what God had warned Israel long ago through Moses, from way back in Exodus chapter 20, verse 23. This is what God said to Israel through Moses: "You shall not make anything to be with me, gods of silver or gods of gold. You shall not make for yourselves." So gods of gold, the worship of money and materialism or mammonism, is still alive and well right through to this day. Hence, I have this admonition: beware of mammonism or materialism. This is the worship and the idolatry of money and material things. Avoid having a money mind, where the ruling disposition is to measure and to evaluate everything in financial terms. Here again, we need to cultivate that disposition of dispossession, which I mentioned earlier. We need to be detached and free from the seduction and the hold of things as an end in themselves. Don't have a collector's view or a covetous view of things. Instead, have a functional view and a utilitarian view. That is, they are there to serve a function and a purpose. Again, going back to Moses' days in the Old Testament, in Numbers chapter 11, verses 33 to 34, we come across a very interesting place name. This was about the time when the children of Israel complained that there was no meat to eat in the desert, and God sent them plenty of meat through quails, which fell all around them. And in Numbers chapter 11, verse 33 and 34, we read, "But while the meat was still between their teeth, before it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord was aroused against the people. And the Lord struck the people with a very great plague. So he called the name of that place Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people who had yielded to craving." Now, the name Kibroth Hattaavah really means graves of greed or craving or lust. So don't yield to the craving of covetousness. Don't be buried in a grave of greed. This is how the psalmist recounted and described it. In Psalm 106, verses 13 through to 15, "They soon forgot his works. They did not wait for his counsel, but lusted exceedingly in the wilderness and tested God in the desert. And he gave them their request, but sent leanness into their soul." You wouldn't ask what you have been asking for out of greed or lust or covetousness from God if you knew that this is going to bring leanness to your own soul. And may you continue to be refreshed by God's presence and to be reached by His Word.
"For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and is himself destroyed or lost?" And as difficult as it may be, we thank God if you've lost money or a job, but gained your soul in the process. Thank you for that good word, Kenneth. And I invite you to join us again tomorrow when Kenneth brings us part two of Recession Revelations. In the meantime, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have a question, maybe you have a comment. Maybe you can send us a text message and let us know. Our phone number is 9431-3813. Or if you would care to write, then our mailing address is Post Office Box 392 Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore 915714. And Times of Refreshing is now on Facebook. You can get the latest updates, you can socialize with Times of Refreshing fans, and you can give us your views right on our Facebook page. I also invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, and there you can listen to the program online. And Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app that allows users to directly access broadcast messages and podcasts right from their iPhones. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.